We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is the Dane Moore NBA podcast brought to you by Blue Wire Podcasts, and the Minnesota Timberwolves are headed to Portland to face Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum and the rest of the Portland Trailblazers on Thursday. Portland has become a team that I've really oddly obsessed with over these past few years, or 2 years, really, since they brought in David Vanterpool. I just think in my mind there are so many reasons to draw parallels between the two teams, and just from a Timberwolves standpoint to think that the next good version of the Timberwolves looks a lot like this Portland team, or kind of the Portland team of the past 2 or 3 years. I just think the Blazers are kind of shaping up to be a proof of concept for what Gerson Rosas is trying to build in Minnesota. So to talk about all this, to talk about my half-baked Blazers-Wolves comparison, Steve DeWald, who covers the Blazers for Blazers Edge, and is one of my, I refer to you and a couple other guys as my quote-unquote summer league friends, who I hang out with like 3 straight days, once a year in July, that we don't see each other for 12 more months. So Steve, I'm going to pepper you with some Wolves-Blazers comparison questions today, but it's been a minute. How are you? What's going on in Steve World?
I'm good. I mean, it's a crazy day here. Obviously, we're recording this a day before, but everything's good.
It's not good. It's bad. It's bad. Today's bad. It's okay to say today's bad.
I'm just. You gotta try to stay positive. So, but on the court, the Blazers are. You never know what you're gonna get each night, so that's exciting. Right now, it's truly just been up and down performances all throughout the season so far. And it's
hey man, that beats
on the David Vanderpool front. I would say
that beats just down
to attach to David Vanderpool. Okay. Yeah.
I mean,
so I
go ahead.
I think the first podcast and the only podcast we were ever on together, I think my claim to fame was, I think it was all the Northwest division teams were all on a podcast. And like my claim to fame on that podcast was like, I think Adam Morris threw the question of like, who's the best coach in the division? Like I instantly like just grabbed Terry Stotts is the best coach. And like now we're reuniting and this is probably the hottest hot seat he's ever been on in Portland. So
they're kind of,
it's
they're kind of all those seats are a little hot, not Malone, I guess, but it's just, I mean, that's what happens, right? When you just have uneven play and you have it for a sustained amount of years. And I mean, obviously the Wolves, I think Saunders is probably feeling some heat too, and they're in a very different place than the Blazers are. But yeah, that's just kind of why I think the Blazers are interesting. It's like they've kind of been in the same place for a while, right? And then you start off this year, and I haven't watched every game, but I've been checking in on the team, watching a few of their games, and And they're just, to me from afar, it's the same thing. It's the same thing. You're good at offense, and it's just, you just give up too many points. You're just bad at defense. So that's where I want to start. They are currently 7 games into the season, 8th on offense and 29th in defense. The 3 games I've watched have all been Blazers losses. But
look,
go ahead.
If you haven't if you didn't watch the Lakers game, this has all been bad this year. So basically, if you're one of those people who haven't watched the Lakers game for the Blazers, it's looked terrible for the most part.
Well, I was just watching the Bulls game from last night, and I actually only got through the first half of it, but I know they lose. And they're up by 19, I think, at the end of the first quarter. I'm like, oh, what's about to happen here? But they just, is that fair? Is 8th on offense, 29th on defense a fair encapsulation of what this team has been?
Honestly, defense, absolutely. Offensively, that seems a little bit high, because I feel like this has not been the free-flowing Blazers offense that we've kind of seen in the last few years. This is a lot of ISO three-point shooting, and I think that 8th in efficiency right now is boosted by some incredible games by CJ McCollum individually.
Sure.
And then also Gary Trent Jr. just went unconscious in the Lakers game. And I really think that rating is really boosted by those performances.
So I'm assuming from where you sit and where Portland Trailblazers fans sit, you bring in Derek Jones Jr., you bring in Robert Covington, and you're thinking that you're raising your defensive floor. And I from my listener's standpoint, I think those are two players that are very interesting to focus on here. Covington, for obvious, was in Minnesota reasons. A lot of people didn't want to let him go. It didn't make sense to let go a player who's very good on defense in a lot of people's eyes. And then Derek Jones Jr. was apparently a player the Wolves pursued heavily this offseason. Again, from what I've watched, neither has looked all that great in the Blazers games. And small sample size, but the defense just doesn't seem better. Do you see what have you seen out of those two, I guess, specifically, and why hasn't the defense been good?
So I'll tackle the two forwards first before I get to the defense, because I don't think they're exactly the same, why the defense has been so bad. Derek Jones Jr. offensively is just such an awkward fit on this team,
so
because this is not a lob passing team. This is a guy who needed to be around when Evan Turner was still on this team. Like, those two could have actually unlocked each other's games, but that's just not the case now. So if you really want to have, you know, go through a horror show of highlights, see the attempted passes on lob passes to Derek Jones Jr. because they're atrocious.
It's bad.
But defensively, there, I have no, I mean, after watching Rodney Hood and Carmelo Anthony play that position for long stretches last year, this is pleasant to watch, because he can close gaps very quickly. He comes off screens quickly. He's usually picking up the best offensive threat on the opposing team, and he's picking them up full court a lot of the time. I have no issues with Derek Jones Jr. Rocco, it's just, he's such an awkward fit in Terry Stotts' system. And I think that's a story of two things that's happened in Portland so far this year. Is they brought in Jim Boylan for 3 weeks in training camp, and they wanted to use this more aggressive style. And after 3 weeks, they basically lit that entire playbook on fire and scrapped it. So now you're asking Covington to get into this really conservative system to where it just doesn't really play to his strengths, especially when you're not using him like Houston did, when you're putting him in the paint and you're letting him go get blocks, because that's where Nurkic is. And it's too conservative on the perimeter to really let him get in those passing lanes. Now, that being said, he does have the stickiest fingers of any Blazers player I've seen in the last 5 years. Like, he does just have a way of stripping the ball from guys going through the lane that Portland just has not had that in the last 5 years, probably since Nick Batum was at the height of his defensive prowess in Portland.
Sure.
Defensively, I think the main problem has been Yusuf Nurkic to start the year. Like, I think it's just been super awkward where they asked him in camp that he's going to be more aggressive off screens, and then they backed off of it. So now he's in this weird middle ground where he's not doing either of those things. And so Portland's getting torched in the paint. I think opponents are shooting like 68% in the paint against the Blazers. Like, it's just not what we've come to expect from Yusuf Nurkic. He looks a step slow, and it's really, he looks as heavy as he was when he arrived from Denver, and it was well documented that he was a late arrival from Bosnia to come back from training camp, and I think he's still behind the ball when it comes to working out. And it's a bummer because he looked really good in the bubble, considering that it was such a short run off that massive injury. So he's been a huge disappointment to start the year.
Well, that it's interesting you talk about the conservative scheme specifically related to Rocco, because I mean, it's literally the same scheme, right? Like, it's Stotts and Vanderpool were running a very conservative scheme where you would have, whether it be Nurkic or whether it be Whiteside or whoever it is, keeping that big at the rim as your rim defender, you know, be a big body there. And once you decide to do that with your center, as the Wolves did with Cat last year, yeah, like it is a scheme where for a player like Robert Covington, who does have those sticky fingers, who does kind of thrive in a little bit aggressive freelancing, there's just limitations. And I don't know if you know this, but last year, the Timberwolves' worst defensive two-man pairing was Cat and Rocco, which is just, right? Like, it's, and that's more Cat than it is Rocco, but it also speaks to this idea that, like, and what I think is playing out in Portland is that he isn't just a fixer, you know? Like, the defense doesn't just rise because of his presence. He's more of a, I don't know, the floor raiser, the whatever it is. He's kind of an elite tertiary defensive piece in my purview, where it's just kind of ends up being a little bit of a funky fit when you're always playing alongside two, maybe three guys who aren't very good defensive players.
And I think when Portland targeted him and gave up two first round picks to get him, I think the plan was still Zach Collins was on track to be back in January. And that fit makes a lot more sense because you can play that aggressive style. You can play that switching style and let him, you know, exploit mismatches and be very active on the defensive end. And it's just that went up in smoke very quickly this year, again, for Zach Collins, which is just a whole nother underlying issue with the Blazers, is they haven't gotten a minute of production from a first round pick from the last half decade to start this year. And it's a problem.
That's not what you want.
I mean, but I will say this, Covington will not be in the lowest defensive pairing, two man pairing on the Blazers, because I was actually looking at this today. Cantor and Carmelo Anthony have played 99 minutes together. Uh-oh. And I believe it's a negative 18 net rating. And I think their defensive rating is like 128 or something. It's something, it's awful. And the eye test matches the numbers for sure. Like, and that's the type of thing that's going to get Terry Stotts removed from this position, is him playing these lineups that he's not willing to switch up. And he's going to have to adapt sooner rather than later, because they can't afford to get into a hole with this roster.
Yeah, it just seems like there's multiple adaptations that need to happen. And when he's had his baseline ideologies of how to coach this team, whether it be defensively, whether it be, you know, offensively, there's just a lot of things that you kind of go, well, we don't know doing the opposite would be better, but you're kind of like, it might be.
It can't be worse.
It can't be worse. Yeah. So I do want to ask about Derek Jones Jr. Just where, like, were you surprised about that signing at the time? And then just kind of like the price tag there? Because I think from a Wolves standpoint, I look at it and I go, well, he basically got a one-year deal from the Blazers at the mid-level. He has a player option for, you know, for the next year. So call it two if you want. You would think that he would have taken more money elsewhere. Now, all the Wolves would have been able to do is also offer the mid-level exception, what Portland did. But they could have offered 3 or 4 years. So before I ask if you think they could have been outbid, did you think that was a good contract, like, at the time before he played at all?
I think just how they have everything structured right now, to where, yes, this is in theory a one-year deal, technically a two-year deal if he picks up the option, every Portland's whole cap structure is on this 2-year plan. So I think this is a safe get in, get out. And I think they're hoping to replicate kind of the same level of commitment they got from Rodney Hood. I think they had a good experience there of getting him to sign on a lower deal. Granted, the injury changed that whole situation, but I think that was the mindset there. Judging by, there was a great article in the New York Times about Derrick Jones Jr. broke down his night of free agency. And I think basically what he talked about is if he was going to go after that longer term deal, it sounded like it was going to be with a team like the Hornets, who is he was expecting, he was hoping for a call from them. And that just never came to fruition. So I think he was going to get a mid-level type deal, but I think just from an agent standpoint, he was looking at a bigger offensive role, which is something that the Blazers, I guess, promised him with a starting position, which has not come to fruition yet.
Well, no, he has got it. He has got the role. It just hasn't worked.
Yeah, that the passing is just not there. Like, I don't pin that on him. And I think he wants to get in, get out. He's still at an age where he can get, he wants to get to that market next year, I think, unless he was going to get a big deal from like the Hornets this summer.
Okay. But, so if the Wolves would have put 440 on the table, which would have been the maximum mid level rather than the 1.95 that he got from Portland, like, do you think he would have been, he would have taken that from the Wolves?
I just don't get that vibe because he's still only 23. And I think, I think he was either going to take a big deal from the Hornets or just look to get in and get out and get onto the free agency, a much friendlier market next year. Because really, if his shot comes around, he's looking at a big deal just with how athletic he is in the position he plays.
So like teams a 15, 16, 17 next summer, you think is what he would, that's his mindset.
I think that is his mindset, and I think there might be a team that'll do it just based on, I mean, probably a lot depends on Portland's success this year, because if it doesn't look good and his fit offensively does not work throughout the year, that's not necessarily what you want to jump into the free agent market with. But if it goes well and Portland's record is decent and he's averaging modest numbers offensively, but his defensive presence is there, he's going to get a lot of credit for that. So is Robert Covington as well. Like, if Portland's defense eventually does improve, those guys are going to get the lion's share of the credit there.
It's interesting just to, and from a Wolves perspective, not that you totally care, but they, you know, they just have nothing at power forward, really. I mean, they signed Wancho to a $7 million a year deal. They've been playing Okogie at the four. It's just clearly they only had the mid-level as an option to really address the position in terms of just outright signings. And they pursued Jones Jr. They pursued Jay Crowder. They pursued Paul Millsap. And they pursued Jermichael Green. And it's just this season, if the Wolves land any of those guys, is I don't want to say night and day different, but it's been like they've lost games because they're starting Jarrett Culver up, you know, power forward, where if you get any of those guys. So the way I think about it is not like immediately to indict the Wolves front office. I think about it from that Jones Jr. standpoint, where I'm like, well, were you just offering a 1-year mid-level? Because there's a big difference if you offer a 1-year mid-level versus a 4-year mid-level. But that's why I'm interested to hear that from you, which that lines up. I hear that logic there because I think he was the guy because he only signed a 1-year deal. Crowder signed a 3-year to go to Phoenix. I don't think it would have moved the needle much to give him a fourth. Like, the Wolves is a worse situation than Phoenix. And then the Millsap thing ended up getting screwy because basically Denver outbid the mid-level to bring him back. They gave him a 1-year 10. And, you know, just that's – I think it was looking like he was coming to Minnesota, but then the Jeremy Grant stuff went down and they needed him, you know. So it's just – I'm going to – that as I every Timberwolves game I watch, I'm going to be thinking about how they just didn't get one of those four guys. And really the one that I think about most is Derrick Jones Jr. So I've been watching these Blazers games with a specific eye on him.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how the order of the calls came in because I believe the Blazers after the call said, hey, we're going to – you either take this offer, we're going to put this offer out there.
Sure.
And – I think there was some intel that said, yes, the Blazers are offering this to other people. We need to call them back and take this deal.
That's what it sounded like in the story.
Pressure might affect.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, granted, you got to take the agent stories with a grain of salt, but right. that was the narrative in the story.
Right. Let's take a quick break and then come back with a couple more questions. Hey everyone, I want to tell you about Blue Wire Hustle, a brand new program where you can host your very own podcast here at Blue Wire. Hustle was created to give everyone the opportunity to take their podcast to the next level. Or if you want to host a podcast and just don't know where to start, Hustle is the perfect place for you. As part of the program, you'll receive cover art for your pod, Q&As with Blue Wire podcasters, access to our community Discord, and an e-learning course full of tips and tricks that we all use. On top of that, we'll get your show pushed out to Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, all those listening platforms. And what I can tell you from my own experience is it costs more than $15 a month to host your own podcast. Blue Wire Hustle only charges that, which is the same rate as any other hosting site would charge you just for the initial setup. So whether you're starting from scratch or have an existing show that you want to grow, Hustle is an open door to leveling up your sports experience. Acceptance into the program is limited, so get your application in today. To apply, go to bwhustle.com/join. Check out the description box to find out more. That's bwhustle.com/join. All right, Steve. So you have been living the good offense, at best below average defense life in Portland for a long time. It's something I talk about a lot, that that's what the Wolves are looking like they're building towards. You know, you talk about Dallas from last year where it's a elite at offense, 17th on defense sort of thing. You talk about what Portland has been a lot of these past 3-4 years. And then kind of the gold standard, right, was Houston back in the CP and Harden year, where I think they were like second and 17th, but looked like a legit, you know, looked like a legit title contender. So you've been living it longer. Like, how much do you believe in that just general roster construction philosophy of building something that probably has a defensive ceiling of like 15th?
I think Portland was robbed of what their Rockets run could have looked like. And it still turned into a Western Conference Finals run, but it was without Nurkic. And I think that was the optimum of top five offense, top 20 defense, and just relying on, you have that star power in the backcourt, and for you guys it would be in the front court. The way D'Lo's playing, it's going to be in the front court. but you just rely on those Lillard, McCollum games in a playoff series where they kind of go unconscious. I think it could work, but I think it just depends on where your talent is in that offensive set. And I think it's so much harder when your main offensive threat is not a guy who plays on the perimeter, who is not above 6'5". I think it just kind of changes the game in those long playoff series. When you're really looking at, is this going to be a title contending team? It's just when those series get physical, it's so much harder on Damian Lillard. And really, McCollum won the Nugget series that got them to the Western Conference Finals.
Totally.
Like, it was all the attention was on Lillard. And by the end of that run, I mean, Lillard was getting doubled at half court and just worn down throughout that entire playoff run. So I think it could work, but I think you definitely have to, where you guys are an advantage is Cat would be your best player. Mm-hmm. And I think that just kind of changes the game as far as how he can generate points and get easy buckets and easier for him to exploit certain mismatches optimally.
It's funny you bring it up like that, because I think that logic actually checks out, but the narrative here is more so like, well, what are you about to do in the last 5 minutes of the game? Like, at least you guys could just give the ball to Dame and he can go just try and score. Like, that's been a problem with the Cat era is, you know, they clearly are like trying to get him the ball late in games, but a lot of times it's like, they've kind of taken away the post option. So here goes, it's an Andrew Wiggins isolation for the last shot of the game. And now maybe we overblow some of that, because it's like at the end of the day, the last shot of the game is just one shot, you know? And that's good perspective from you, where it's like, for the whole series, like, Cat probably isn't going to be getting overwhelmed physically in the same way, you know, that Lillard was. I mean, a whole thing we need to acknowledge here is, it's like, Lillard is, at a different offensive level than Cat is too. But this is all me talking through like the rose-colored glasses of if the Wolves are where the Blazers are, you know, 2 years, if they could get to a playoff series to, you know, to do some of this, it's, I don't know, that's interesting you put it like that, because I bet you a lot of people who are listening to this from on the Wolves side are like, huh, that's not really what you would think.
Well, I think I have had, you've watched the Blazers just get rocked in these series. Like, outside of that Western Conference Finals run, without LaMarcus Aldridge, the Lillard Blazers have been run out of the playoffs routinely. Like, when they lose a series, it's a sweep.
Yeah.
And it's ugly, and it's that Pelicans Blazers series, that opening round, that gives me nightmares to this day. Like, it was the most uncomfortable series to watch, and it was just, Lillard was powerless that whole series, right. And it was just, I mean, triple teams. And my idea would be is, if you have a bigger guy, you can at least, if you have a competent guard, you can just try to pick and roll a team to death in the playoffs, or try to just work your way into a favorable matchup, where it's just a little bit harder to disguise your primary facilitator and the guy who's bringing up the ball every time. Like, it's just a totally different ball game with Lillard.
Well, so we've jumped onto the offensive side of this equation, which wasn't, which I think is interesting, but wasn't my intention, right? It's more the idea of having your defensive weaknesses be sort of exposed in a playoff series, right? Like, I think that's what we think of even with the best teams, like a Steph Curry. You know, are the Rockets targeting, you know, a Steph Curry? Is Dame getting targeted in these situations? Is Kat gonna get, you know, just blitzed in, you know, in pick and roll? Not to mention D'Angelo Russell is like four rungs below all those guys. Like, is that just gonna be over and over and over again? That's what I think about in a playoff series, if the Wolves ever get there, where they, if the Wolves ever do get to the playoffs, it's going to be because they're going to have like a top three offense. Like, that's what it's going to be. But with this group, it's going to be D'Lo, who's one of the worst defensive point guards in the league. Malik Beasley is not a strong defender. Anthony Edwards has a lot of learning to do there. You know, he's physically imposing. Obviously, the narrative with Cat defensively for as long as it's been. That's where my concerns are about building a team that's more focused on net impact versus balance on both sides of the ball.
I guess on the flip side, I guess offensively, I would rather have the big guy, but defensively, you're at such a disadvantage
for sure.
If your big guy is a, and I mean, really that's what the Blazers lived through before Nurkic. I mean, Mason Plumlee was a disaster underneath. Like, he just is not a rim protector. Like, he's a fun offensive player. He does some fun things, gets rebounds, but he's not a guy who's going to protect the rim. And really, I think it's just, if you're getting to a postseason with an offense-heavy team, what you want to do is bend, don't break, and play to your strengths on offense. And really, the Blazers have the advantage where when CJ McCollum is really locked in on defense, they can always hide either him or CJ, but you can't ever hide them both.
Yep.
And when they can both be exposed, that's where Portland really runs into issues defensively in the postseason. But
right. I think of that OKC series where like CJ competed against Paul George, and like I thought that was a huge difference, you know, there. And then obviously they had Harkless, right? And it was like, that group was competing enough so that they could kind of hide Dame in a way that allowed him to be, you know, well, hit in one and just save some energy for offense. But that's interesting you put it like that. You can't hide both of them. You can't really hide two in the playoffs, can you?
Especially in the back, in your backcourt, they're gonna find one of them. And really, I mean, that OKC series, They just played Russell Westbrook perfectly. They just stood in the paint and said, if you want to shoot threes, shoot threes. And that's how they hit Damian Lillard. I would say, even though they lost the series, is 2 years ago, or the year before the Western Conference Finals run, they played the 2 years before that. They've been eliminated by the Warriors so many times. I get them mixed up in my head.
Hey, at least you're there.
It was in the second round it was against the second round of the Warriors, and CJ played probably the best series I've ever seen someone play against Klay Thompson. Mm-hmm. Like, he chased him around everything and was just super engaged. The Blazers were ahead in like every single one of those games, just blew it at the end of every single one of them. But I would say defensively, that was the best they've ever looked against an elite team. And granted, they lost the series in four games, but they still looked good.
You know who they had coaching defensively. Their defense then? David Vanterpool.
Yeah.
Do you think that has cost the Blazers defensively? And will like last year's such a, you know, shit show with the Blazers with all the injuries. But, like, do you think they miss Vanterpool a lot?
Oh, I think absolutely this year more than ever. And I think if you have a David Vanterpool there, you're not bringing in Jim Boylan for 3 weeks. Like, I think you're just going, hey, let's keep this in-house. Let's rework the defense and let's go from here. It's not bring in a recently fired coach and see what happens and then tear it to shreds.
Right.
So I just think really from a Lillard standpoint, I'd be interested to see I'd really like to see Vanderpool there because I think he was just such a steadying force for Lillard while he was here. Like, that was his guy. When you saw Lillard go to the bench, it was always to David Vanderpool first. And I feel like, especially now where it's a lot of new faces and an attempted new system, and you have the mellow factor here, which they get along, but they're still the mellow factor. Mm-hmm. I feel like having Vanderpool here is a steadying force for him. I think that's what's probably, for me, I would imagine is missing most, but obviously the defensive thing. I think, especially this season where they kind of have the pieces to where it would let Vanderpool kind of work and explore a little bit.
No, that's
I just think from a Dame standpoint.
Like,
but I still think if Stotts goes, I think Vanderpool's got to be number one on the list.
Really?
For the Blazers. Yeah.
I mean, so now let's invert that and look at it like the Wolves. Right now, where you sit as the Wolves, it, like, let's, like, hypothetically say Ryan Saunders is gone this year, you know, and if Vanderpool is not, like, the coach in waiting, which, you know, a lot of people think that here, but if he's not and they just, like, let Saunders go and bring somebody else in, it's like, why did Vanderpool come? You know, he has this, like, stellar reputation of like the Dame and CJ whisperer and is some defensive guru, even though the Blazers were never really that good at defense. You know, it's like, it just seems very bizarre. And as I understand it, it was a big promotion for him. He wasn't the associate head coach in Portland, even though he was the defensive coordinator. And then he comes here and is the associate head coach, has substantially more pull than I'm sure he had, you know, next to Stotts, not to mention probably a big pay raise, but it's just an interesting risk by him, you know, like that's what I've thought about the Vanterpool thing all along.
Well, I don't think at the time when he left, he was the clear number two in Portland. And I think that was a dynamic always with Portland that was keeping Nate Tibbetts back, who was the offensive guy for Portland, who was, I think, if anything happens this season, Tibbetts is the next in line. But those two guys both wanted to be associate head coaches. And I think it was basically the offense has been so good. Tibbetts is the offensive guy. Obviously, he's going to stay.
Yeah.
And then Vanderpool left.
Huh.
So,
but it really is with him, with Vanderpool, like it's less like defensive wizardry and more like personality, getting guys to buy in, getting guys to understand the value of film watch. I mean, that's what I've sort of gathered over the time, because even Wiggins was like, Wiggins and Vanterpool are tight. Now Vanterpool is like Edwards's guy. Like that seems to be more so what he was brought here to be than to, you know, to be the guy drawing up defensive sets.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, just anybody you talk to who's interacted with Vanderpool at any point in their career, it's always a positive review. Like I remember when the Blazers drafted Anthony Simons, I was talking to the coach the athletic director at IMG, and he coached Vanderpool in college. Huh. And that was the first thing he asked me about. I mean, this is 20 years ago. And it's like, hey, do you have his number? Can you talk? And like, so I got reconnected them at Summer League. I was like, hey, this is Brian Nash. He's looking for you, Vanderpool. And so like, and they reconnected. And I think just everybody, it's that person to person interaction. And so that building of, and that's, I think that's why Lillard reached some of the levels he reached. Now, granted, Lillard is very driven on his own and very talented on his own, but I think some of the leadership aspects, especially in that vacuum after the LaMarcus Aldridge departure, I think a lot of that is credited to David Vanderpool, because early in Dame's career, he had Earl Watson on at the end of the bench with him, and then even Mo Williams a little bit. But after those guys left and LaMarcus left, it was really Vanderpool that really kind of did that last little bit of seasoning on Dame's leadership that you see today, that he's kind of known for.
And that's not you just saying that, like, Dame has came out and said that himself. Oh, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It's interesting, man. I mean, it's bizarre. It's bizarre from a Wolves standpoint. I mean, it's obviously not gone well in terms of wins and losses since Saunders has taken over. Yet at the same time, it's this whole, like, the roster's been broken, Cat's been broken. Like, it's so many different things. And it's just, obviously, it's very important when you're a team that's, like, has this young core of some 25-year-old and under talent to have an idea of what your vision is, you know, and, like, who's going to be the coach going forward. Like, what – because I think what will happen is if David Vanderpool does take over for Ryan Saunders, like, the identity of this team changes. Like, just – I guess from a personality standpoint, but also just from a basketball standpoint, like – Vanderpool is very conservative, like, as a coach, like, like basketball wise, where Saunders is actually pretty, like, going on a whim, going up, which that sounds bad, but he plays a little bit more by feel. And it's just, these things really matter, you know, when you look back around the league outside of our two teams too, like, some groups never make it. And it's because, and you look back and you go, what if they would have done something differently? Not necessarily with the roster, but with the coach. And I think that could be the case for both Portland and Minnesota when we look back at, like, 5 years from now.
Yeah, I think it just really, when Terry Stotts came in, the Blazers just kind of had this run of, like, this isn't working with Nate McMillan at the end. And then they do this weird hire of Caleb Canales, who is – an excellent assistant, but, like, was definitely not ready for a head coaching position. And then I think that pivot to Stotts, who was very much a steadying force and very conservative as well, and coming from that Carlisle system, I think just really allowed the Blazers to blossom into what they did in this decade, which there has not been a tremendous amount of playoff success, but they've been there. They've been in the discussion. They have a marquee backcourt pairing, and before that pairing, you had LaMarcus Aldridge in the front court. So coaching is huge. I think coaching and GM, if you nail that combination, that is going to push, you know, good talent to excellent talent, excellent potential.
That's a good way to put it. The last thing I want to talk to you about, because I feel like when we randomly just text each other, the most common topic is Jake Layman. He was one of your guys back in Portland, and it's been a weird year for him. I don't know how much you've seen in Minnesota. He was starting, and it just went terribly, terribly. Like, and it just, he just seemed like a guy that, you know, wouldn't be that variable in what he, you know, what he could do and what he could be. I guess my that's just my question to you. Like, I guess now 2 years ago, when Jake Layman was doing kind of the same thing for the Blazers, started at the beginning of the year and then kind of moved into a different role. Like, why did you fall in love with the idea of what Jake Layman could be?
Just because I think he was what Mo Harkless wasn't as far as an attitude standpoint, at least on the court. Like, he was a guy who would cut. Even if he didn't have the ball or didn't have a play drawn up for him, he was always moving off the ball, which was not something Portland had from their either Al-Farouq Aminu or Maurice Harkless for long stretches. Those guys would go park in the corners and then go nuts when they got the ball, and it usually didn't end well. At least Jake Layman at least moved with purpose. He was one of the rare guys that would get out in transition in Stotts' offense, which, again, very conservative on the offensive end as well as far as transition goes. So he was just one of those, and he just seemed like he was very engaged and very, very much bought into Portland's culture, very much, you know, this is this is Dame and CJ's team. It's how I fit around these guys. It's how I play off these guys. And, you know, I'm going to follow their lead on the floor, which I think is something that you want from, you want active guys who know their roles and play to their strengths. Now, granted, it just never quite worked out for him because Mo Harkless is so hot and cold that when he's hot, he's going to get that spot and those minutes back. And it's just, it leaves Jake at a disadvantage when he's finally getting in rhythm. He was someone who I was really curious when they made the move to get him to where he wanted to go in Minnesota. So.
It makes sense. Everything you just described that he didn't have in Portland, he's basically got in Minnesota. Like, for sure, the being able to play in transition. I mean, I think that's pretty clearly like the most intriguing element of his game. And the Wolves are not conservative offensively in that way. And they're going to get out and run. And then he doesn't have he hasn't had the blockades of a Harkless and an Aminu around him. Like the opportunity has been here. Now it's been weird because, you know, last year he's actually playing pretty well through the first, I don't know if he played like 18 games or something, then he wrecked his toe. So he got pulled out of it. And that's, I guess, just this year, you know, I'm looking at the roster and it's, you kind of look at the 3-4 where, you know, Jake fits in, like this dude can take a, he could take a 30-minute a game role, even if as like a fifth in usage type guy out there. Like this is all his to be had. And it was so bad. I mean, he's been a little bit better now in a bench role the past two games, I think, off the top of my head, but just making bad decisions and also just losing confidence, like getting to the rim and not like finishing when he's like, his layup package has been, I mean, he can get up and dunk, you know, like those look nice, but it's been super weird. It's been super weird.
That's odd because that is, I mean, he was Mr. Irrational Confidence when he was in Portland, when he got a long leash in the second unit. I mean, those threes were going, if he hit his first one, he was taking five of them.
Right.
And so that is a little odd. And I think my main thing with my gripe within Portland was just, they were really trying to play him at small forward. And I think the biggest piece I ever wrote on him was, this guy is the stretch four Portland wants on their second unit. Mm-hmm. Why are they not playing him at power forward?
Right.
And it's just odd that it's too bad that that's kind of been, I haven't watched him a lot in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of a bummer. That's what's plaguing him there, because that was, he definitely,
so you think he should play four?
Didn't have the opportunity.
You think he should play four?
I think he's, I've always thought he was a four, even when the Blazers drafted him, I always saw him as a four.
So it's been weird. Like, if you like pull up Cleaning the Glass, they're crediting his minutes all to the four, but like he was starting the first few games alongside Okogie, and Okogie is guarding Blake Griffin and being guarded by Blake Griffin. Like, I don't know how else you that's the four, you know, and they're like playing Okogie in the dunker, like a good amount, but it's literally, I think like the Cleaning the Glass people are like, oh, that like Layman's way taller, you know, he's there. So
Ben Falk is a Portland guy, so same wavelength.
There you go. I think he'll still get some chances here, just because this is going to be a long year for the Wolves. But what I do think, and this wasn't my idea, but another guy I was talking to on the Wolves beat is like, I think he's just like 26 years old, and he's got this starting job, and he kind of goes, if I don't like take this here, like kind of hit on these first 20, 25 games of the season, this is probably my last chance to be a starter, you know, in the NBA.
Yeah.
Right. And I think he just kind of started
playing tight.
Yeah. I think he looked like he was, I mean, clearly he was playing tight. He didn't score the first, he started and didn't score the first two games. And then in the third game, he's like cuts under the basket and he's wide open and just grabs the ball and dunks it. And just like, he's up there and he comes down to the ground and he just goes, oh, like he's just, you know, clearly he knows it. Like he knows everything, you know, he knows everything he's not doing. It's just been interesting. 'Cause as we've talked about over the years, I've been like, you know, cautiously optimistic about a guy like Layman. You know, you got, if you can get a, he's making like $3.5 million. If you can get a guy who's a starter or even like a seventh man, you weave together a couple of contracts like that with guys who are on cheap deals for multiple years in your rotation, that's extremely valuable. And that was what I anticipated out of Layman. It just hasn't come together.
Well, and that's, I mean, really, he was the next in line to be the second round pick that flourished in Portland. I mean,
yeah.
But from whatever Portland hasn't gotten in the first round, they've gotten more, their cup runneth over in the second round. Like, I mean, all their, like, every successful draft pick in the last 5 years has come out of the second round. I mean, they've had success with Pat Connaughton, with Jake Layman, and, well, Jake Layman's tenure was cut a little short, and now Gary Trent Jr. has just reached a whole new level. So
last question. How scared are you of losing to the Timberwolves tomorrow? They're so bad, dude. The Wolves are so bad.
The Blazers can lose to anyone is what I have learned. Like the Rockets game, you're playing against a COVID depleted team there. They got 9 active players. You got Harden's first game. It's just, I don't know. I just hope they don't lose to the Wolves, because if they can't get up for this game after the Bulls game, it's going to be a long set of games for the Blazers for a while until something changes. And if they don't react to the type of Terry Stotts has never gotten very vocal and called out his guys in post game, and he did that for the first time after the Bulls game. And
what do you call out?
He basically just the team in general, basically he never really turns it on to the guys, especially motivation wise. And it's basically like, look, if you can't get up for this game, I can't give you a fiery halftime speech that's going to suddenly make our guys motivated.
Right.
Like that's just that doesn't seem harsh after a loss like that. But for Terry Stotts, that's like pulling up and firing a gun in the air. Like that's pretty serious stuff from him.
This is all probably very encouraging. This is very encouraging for Timberwolves fans. And at the same time too, it's like, I don't have any illusions that this Wolves team is going to the playoffs or anything, but what the Wolves are on the verge of is like losing the season, having the season be lost 15 games into the year. And like, to some extent, losing when you have Kat out is, you know, totally expected. But if Kat misses 12 games and the Wolves go 0-12 in that run, you know, your year's over. Like, what are you even really doing? And so I think you will get a hungry Wolves team. Go ahead.
I'm interested to see what Melo does against the Wolves, because yes, you guys don't really have a power forward, a true power forward, and that roster is very slim in that end.
Yes.
So I think if it's an undersized guy in there, I just don't think Melo has the constitution to not try to post that guy up every time he comes down the floor, and that will just absolutely kill the Blazers offense.
See, they've been laying the groundwork, because that is for sure gonna happen. Okogie's not playing. He's just ruled out before this. So like, Wancho's gonna start. Layman will get like some minutes there. They started playing like I don't know. They could go bigger where they go like Jared Vanderbilt and Nasri, but it's like in Melo's head, they're either going to be undersized physically or just undersized in like quality of players. Be like, who's Nasri? Like, I'm gonna try and.
Yeah.
Huh, that's interesting. That's the X factor. Yeah. Melo playing for the Wolves.
The bench, like Cantor does positive things on the offensive end, but defensively it's buckle up when those two are on the floor.
Oh, dude, because... but Cantor's going to kill the Wolves on the glass. He will murder. The Wolves aren't only thin at forward, they're thin at center too. All right, man. Well, I'm looking forward to it tomorrow. Thank you for coming on and chatting. You know, maybe we'll have to take the pulse on where we were today. 7 games into the season where the teams are just broken. I obviously the Wolves and Blazers will meet up again, but Sorry, I took a little bit more than a half hour of your time. Thanks, Steve.
No, you're good. You're good. I didn't get to talk about how D'Lo is the backcourt version of Hassan Whiteside, and I don't envy you for having to watch him all season.
No. Not yet. We're not there yet.
Come on. I listened to your D'Lo pod from last week, and I was just like, ooh, does not sound like it's going well.
Dude, so. Speaking of media, he's just skipping the media stuff every time, and which is like that, you know, that's not like that big of a deal, but it's just like, it's not good when you're replacing Andrew Wiggins, who is like 10 out of 10 hated by the fan base, and you're like starting to infringe. You're like, no, I want that spot. Not a good idea. All right, Steve.
I heard Ed Davis is getting in on the, you guys are being too tough on D'Lo. So don't make Ed Davis upset. All right.
The funny part about that was so everybody's just peppering him with D'Lo questions in the postgame media. And I just happened to be the person to ask like the sixth and final question. And mine was positive. I was like, so like, what did you see from D'Lo to get the, like, that he started kind of got going, you know, in the game. And he's just like, man, y'all are hard on D'Lo. And I'm like, what? No, like those guys are hard on him. I'm ready to watch the D'Lo experience. Let's figure it out, and let's not assume he's Hassan Whiteside. We can't get there yet. We can't get there yet. I can't get there. I'll go crazy.
Well, we'll talk soon then. That's what I'm looking forward to. I'm looking forward to checking in on the D'Lo Hassan Whiteside
call. No. All right. Steve is at Steve D Hoops on Twitter. Obviously, you can find that all in the tweet that I promote this with. Follow his work and everything you guys do at Blazers Edge is really good. I've told you, I'm like, I'm this closet Blazers fan over here, and I'll be, you know, they got the West Coast game. You're like, oh, okay. I'll turn this one in, and I'm following along with what you guys are doing.
Yeah. Hopefully you'll catch a good one here one of these days.
Over three so far. All right, Steve, I will talk to you soon. For me, I will be back after the Blazers game for a post-game pod. Until then, I am Dane. Peace out. How I'm feeling, man, I hope it never stop, yeah. Green and hot so you can find me in the crowd, yeah. Don't let standards ever.